What's the transit mode?
Tough was cool to look.
Yeah, I'll get
it. Coach, right there.
All right, I'd like to call the Metro Council business meeting to order. Sorry. we have present all but Craig Dirks, Councilors Dirksen and Councilor Chase, who are excused. And Councilor Craddock is participating by phone. So thank you. Councilor Craddock, welcome. Can you hear us, Councilor Craddock?
Thank you. I'm on mute, so thank you.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure the system was working. All right, thank you. I will now ask Councilor Stacey to provide the safety briefing.
Thank you, Madam President. Please note that we are on the third floor of the building. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit through the door in the northeast corner of the room, go down the steps to the second floor, and exit through the doors next to the reception desk. We will meet in the courtyard outside that entrance to the building. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and report the incident to the security agent at the front desk. The nearest defibrillator is mounted on the steps leading from the reception desk on the second floor down to Grand Avenue, and a fire extinguisher is located to my left in the hallway next to the dais along the wall there.
Awesome.
Best I could do.
You did great. Thank you. I will now open up for public communication. Anyone who wishes to testify on a non-agenda item can come forward. Please fill out a blue card from the back and hand it to the clerk. So far, we have had no one wanting to testify on a non-agenda item. Again, I will just say this would be the time to come forward on a non-agenda item. Seeing none, I will close the public communication portion of our meeting. We have two presentations today. The first one is with our Metro Auditor, Brian Evans. If you guys want to come forward, it's a minority-owned, women-owned, I need to take off my glasses, an emergency small business procurement follow-up audit. Thank you.
Thank you, President Peterson and Metro Councilors, for the opportunity to present the results of our follow-up audit on MWSB procurement. I'm here with Angela Owens, who's a senior management auditor in my office who completed the audit. Before I turn it over to Angela to talk about some of the more detailed aspects of our results, I wanted to give some background and context for the original audit and also this audit that we've recently completed. Metro is one of several governments in Oregon with a program designed to increase equity in contracting for minority-owned, women-owned, service-disabled, veteran-owned, and emerging small businesses. The name of the program has changed several times over the years, but in general, the same a version of this program has been in place at Metro since 1980, if not before. The program is administered by the procurement function in Metro's Finance and Regulatory Services Department. Responsibility for carrying out the program is shared with all of Metro's departments and venues. Program requirements depend on the contract type and size or the amount. So in general, there are two types of contracts that affect requirements. One is for public improvements that are major construction or renovation projects, and the other type is for other goods and services that the government may purchase. The dollar value of contracts also affects program requirements, and in general, there are three levels: small, intermediate, and formal. Our March 2014 audit found weaknesses in the program's design and implementation. There was confusion and disagreement about what the program was supposed to accomplish and the level of effort it required. Procedures were unclear and not always followed, and a better performance measurement system was needed. The audit made five recommendations, and this audit that we initiated last year was to determine the status of those recommendations. The follow-up audit found that progress was made on all five of the recommendations, and two of them were fully implemented. I'm going to turn it over to Angela now to talk about our conclusions for each of the recommendations.
As mentioned, the audit found progress was made on all recommendations. At the time of our review, two were fully implemented and three were in process. The 2014 audit made five recommendations. To strengthen the program and procurement function, the audit recommended that Metro 1 more clearly define the goal for the program. 2, strengthen procurement's ability to review and ensure compliance with policies and procedures for all contract types and values. To improve management of the program and procurement generally, the audit recommended that the department, 3, align program activities with goals, 4, strengthen performance measurements, and 5, improve consistency by ensuring procedures are in agreement and clearly communicate program requirements. During the audit, we found that Metro strengthened the program by more clearly defining the program goal and aligning it with activities. Specifically, adoption of administrative rules in 2017 formalized a program goal to increase Metro business with certified firms. The rules also refined and formalized program activities. Work plans and processes were in place to carry out program activities, and the program appeared to complement other Metro efforts related to diversity and equity. As a result of these improvements, we concluded that 2 of the audit recommendations were fully implemented. The administrative rules also increased procurement's authority for reviewing and ensuring program requirements were met. At the time of our review, work was still underway to clarify guidance and strengthen procurement's overall ability to ensure consistent application of program requirements for all contact types and values. As a result, 2 audit recommendations were in process. Continued implementation of these audit recommendations will be important as weaknesses in these areas increase the risk that program rules could be applied inconsistently. The 2014 audit also found weaknesses in the department's performance measurement system. The audit found performance measures in place were insufficient for meaningful assessment. There was no clear or consistent methodology to generate and report the data, and there were no processes to catch potential errors or inaccuracies. Procurement made progress in all 3 of these areas, but more work was needed in 1 in order to fully implement this recommendation. Specifically, since the 2014 audit, procurement began using measures that more accurately assessed program performance. For example, procurement began tracking and reporting contract dollars spent. This was important because not all contract amounts awarded are fully spent. Procurement also documented its methodology for developing the annual report and updated it based on lessons learned during the annual report process. Despite these improvements, data quality challenges remained and had the potential to impact the accuracy of the information that's reported. For example, developing the report was complex and required manual processes to retrieve, exclude, and calculate the data. In the absence of automated and easy-to-calculate data, strong quality control reviews are necessary. During our review, we saw examples of inconsistent and inaccurate information that was reported. Other government agencies experienced challenges in reporting performance measures related to equity and contracting. In order to ensure reliable assessment of the program and department performance, it will be important to evaluate the significance of the remaining challenges to determine if additional efforts are needed to improve accuracy. At a minimum, a stronger quality control process, review process is necessary to fully implement this audit recommendation. And now Brian's going to talk about additional areas of consideration.
Angela. As part of the follow-up work, we also noted 2 areas that could improve the program that were not directly related to the audit recommendations from the 2014 audit, but were pretty similar to some of the themes we saw at that time. The first area was unclear agency-wide performance targets. So some documents that we reference or that we reviewed as part of the follow-up audit showed a goal of 15% utilization, while others showed a goal of 20% utilization. And the data that was reported by procurement showed that Metro may have reached the 15% performance target, but may have not reached the 20% target. So depending on which goal is the operable goal, Metro either has more work to do or may have already met its requirement. And so I think that's important to note as you consider if additional efforts are needed. The second area that we looked at or that we noted that continues to be a bit of a challenge is continued confusion around the appropriateness of agency-wide targets. So a little bit of a history here. From at least 1980 through 1995, Metro Council adopted annual performance targets for each of the certification types, so minority-owned, women-owned, and what was then called disadvantaged business. So each had its own performance target. In the mid-1990s, several court rulings put limitations on these programs and required that the targets be based on a documented disparity and narrowly tailored to justify focusing on a certain demographic group. Metro participated in a disparity study in 1994, and the study looked at disparity among contract types such as construction and professional services and the demographics of the business ownership in the region based on ethnicity and gender. The program's current targets are for utilization across all certification types, which means that Metro could meet those goals without awarding any contracts to minority-owned, women-owned, or service-disabled veteran-owned businesses. As Metro considers whether additional efforts are needed to ensure equity in contracting, it will be important to assess the trade-offs. Stronger targets among certified firms may increase performance if a disparity is identified, but could require further investment in time to reduce the potential for legal challenges to the program. I want to thank Gabby Schuster and her staff for their assistance during the audit and be happy to answer any questions you have for us, or if you want to wait and hear the management response, you can do that then.
Yeah, why don't we wait for a minute? Gabby.
Good afternoon. My name is Gabby Schuster. We want to thank the auditor's office for the follow-up audit because we believe that it really helps us to develop the program further and to improve our processes. There has been a lot, there's a background history about the program. There has been a lot of work done after the initial audit in 2013. We conducted a project. It was called the Procurement Enhancement Project because we were aware of inconsistency, not only in the MWESB program, the formerly MWESB program, but across procurement services. So the Procurement Enhancement Project, it was called PEP1, and there was PEP2 acronyms, was a project that implemented, that included an assessment first throughout the agency, and then as a result implemented more consistent processes. And then in 2017, we completely overhauled the Metro Contracting Code 2.04 and implemented the Local Contract Review Board administrative rules that also include the equity contracting program. So the old traditional MWESB program was completely overhauled as well. We took the audit recommendations at the time in consideration, so that was very helpful. We appreciate that a lot, and also again with this follow-up audit, it really helps us keep on track of the things that we need to focus on. With the implementation of the Local Contractor Review Board rules and the Equity Contracting Program, we provided a lot of training to the agency, all staff that is involved in the procurement process and in the equity contracting process that is in regards to MWESB firms, now known as COBIT firms. We were able to fix some inconsistencies with the training and implementing new rules, but we also recognize that it is a process. So whenever you implement a change, there's a messy process until you get to a more cleaner process. The PEP project and the new rules are really helping with more consistency in the agency that we never stop working on. In terms of reporting, we are aware of challenges with systems. We know that there are always there's always room for improvement for systems, and we are actually currently working on system improvements for our financial system that will help with this as well. Another challenge is the COBIT database certifications that are active and then not active. So these This is constant work that we are undertaking to this day. And also, we are networking with other public agencies because they're experiencing those same challenges with certifications and then reporting on the utilization of contracts with another database from the state, so with those certifications. In terms of goals, we also appreciate the auditor's office looking into that. It's a complex issue that we are all aware of, and we also know that the one-size-fits-all doesn't work. We are trying to go more towards developing goals for procurements and projects that are aligned with availability of certification types, because when you look at the COVID database, there is the availability for example, white women-owned businesses in comparison to people of color-owned businesses, there's a huge difference. Generally speaking, white women-owned businesses and emerging small white male-owned businesses, there's a larger number. And then also different industry types have more certifications than others. So it's a very complex a process, setting goals and developing goals. And so we're trying to develop our goals more around that and also looking at other agencies, what their practices are. And then again, overall, we agree with the audit, and we are in the process of improving more consistent, the inconsistency. We are in the process of centralizing procurement services that will really help with a lot of miscommunication and a lot of back and forth between procurement services and the contracting departments. Systems improvements will also help with the better reporting and having a better method. And I'm open for your questions.
Great, thank you. I think you've got an interested crew up here and probably a further work session in the future just to understand the breadth and depth of where you're at. I think we all have a good understanding, but probably want to, I'm already feeling it, that they're going to want to talk more about the program and how to further it than the actual audit. So why don't we just ask for a follow-up work session and anything you'd want to talk about in that work session?
Sure, I'm particularly heartened to hear about your work to centralize procurement services. The centralization needs don't stop at procurement, but actually on administering the contract and make sure that we're in a place where we're ready to call the question about, are we getting what we need as Metro and as an agency that has very specific and inclusive values? I think that's really important. Just hearing your description of some of the manual data manipulation needed, that doesn't surprise me. I've seen the 1980s computer that runs half of the telephones in this building. So I do know that there are some technology upgrades that we could all benefit from, and hope that procurement will not be shy in saying what the best case scenario would be for a technology upgrade.
Stacey, well, and Councillor Gonzalez.
Thank you. Anything I would say at this point would be politically incorrect. I learned constitutional law in 1973 when the recognition of racial disparity and racism in the country's past was viewed by the Supreme Court as a sufficient justification for preferential hiring and retention policies that were explicit in their goal of leveling the playing field and making greater racial equity available across the country. Those precedents have been overturned. I'm still in denial. And so I applaud everything we can do to bring our objectives in the COVID program and our other work closer to our DEI objectives and do the best possible legal work to protect our decision making.
Councilor Gonzalez.
Well, thank you, Auditor Evans and team, for the follow-up, for the report to Council, for highlighting what's in the report, echoing what my colleague said. I've had the opportunity to speak one-on-one with some of the procurement staff, and just the amount of work that the team does to advance our racial equity strategy in everything is commendable I know that there's a lot of work to do, but thank you. I specifically recognize the need to strengthen compliance, and I know that internally we're working on that, as well as finding better ways to visualize our data and to tell the story behind the data and to hold ourselves accountable to that. Nonetheless, thank you for your work. Thank you for your work. I'm very excited for a briefing and a work session to see how we can continue to advance these goals, because I think they're critical. I think we all agree they're critical to the direction that Metro is heading in, whether it's C2P2 or regional investment strategy. I mean, Metro needs to be, you know, leading the way, innovating, implementing, and I have full faith that the teams that we have in place can take us there. So, gracias.
That, I think I'm excited to have a deeper discussion. I appreciate the follow-up from the auditor and the work that was done in the meantime. And I think the question is just, as been stated, how do we help get you to the next level? How do we get Metro and the region? There are a lot of expectations of what Metro will achieve just through its bond measures, let alone its procurement inside. So starting internally is probably the better place to start. Before we ask other people to step up. So, thank you. Thank you both. Much appreciated. Did you have anything? I'm sorry. Andrew.
That feedback, actually, and I think getting a work session scheduled makes a lot of sense. So, and as I said in the past audits, sorry, everyone always stood up. No, I wanted to thank Gabi and her team for their work, and thank the auditor and his staff as well. This is yet another follow-up audit, and I've really benefited being relatively new to the organization to sort of see the context and history on some of these key programs and where we are making progress, which is great, and where we still need to continue to work on it, which is also very helpful. So, thanks.
Thanks.
Councilor Peterson?
Oh, can you hear me? Craddock. Hold on, everybody. Councilor Craddock, I apologize. Go ahead.
No, excuse me. I thought I was off mute, and I wasn't, so excuse me. I just have one comment and a question, if that's okay.
Yep.
Okay. I agree with the other comments that have been made by the councilors. This is an ongoing process, and it's going to take us a while to get this all figured out, and I'm so pleased that we are trying to figure it out and have confidence that we'll eventually have all the processes, the correct processes in place to be able to collect accurate data. And then once that occurs, then obviously this is a program that we will do more to bring it to the entire region. So I'm pleased and happy with the direction that we're going, regardless that there's still some challenges to have good data. The question I have then, though, I know this is a follow-up audit, and this is to the auditor. So what are your next steps and plans for this particular audit? How will you continue to monitor this? When do you expect that you'll come back to us regarding this audit?
Thanks for the question, Councillor Craddock. Just as a reminder, we stopped tracking audit recommendations after 5 years, and so this is the fifth year since the original audit came out. So we will likely stop tracking these audits or recommendations in a formal way, but we'll keep the information available to inform our annual audit selection, and to the extent that this is a priority for our office or we see weaknesses in the future, then we would obviously pick it back up and potentially do some new audit work if the timing is right and there's a need for us to look at it again.
I guess from what I've read, I would think that's the case. And so obviously you will be meeting with the council to plan your next audit, and create your next audit plan. I know that will be probably in the next year. So I will keep this in mind, because I think this would be an excellent program to continue to review.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. No further comments. Thank you. All right, we have our second report from our Interim Metro Finance and Regulatory Services Director, Brian Kennedy. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you. Council President Peterson, members of the Metro Council, thank you for having me here today. And I'm Brian Kennedy, the Interim Director of Finance and Regulatory Services. I'm here to present the third quarter financial report. So for some of you, this is your first time experiencing the third quarter report at Metro. This report has two primary purposes. The first is we use it to track the progress of the current fiscal year. Are there any issues that are going to require budget amendments prior to the end of the fiscal year? And the second purpose is to track our revenues and fund balance to make sure there are no issues that will affect our projections for the next year's budget. So the good news in the third quarter report is that things are looking good. Our revenues are strong across the agency. In particular, transient lodging tax and the construction excise tax are both showing continued growth and coming in above our budgeted projections. The zoo is doing well. They're trending above our projections, looking to end the year and increase their ending fund balance. On the slightly not as good of news portion, Glendevere Golf Course is coming in lower than projected, slightly above the three-year average, but again, kind of representing the challenges that we're seeing across the region when it comes to publicly owned golf courses. On the expenditure side, our expenditures are tracking close to the budget, which is excellent news. We don't see any significant issues for the current year budget. Starting next week, you'll be hearing about the Department of Budget Amendments, which will be dealing with any of those issues we did identify. And then when we're looking at the fiscal 19-20 budget, we don't see any issues that require council action. Our fund balances are looking to come in either at our projection or slightly above, which is excellent news. So I don't want to belabor the point. The news is looking good. We are doing well, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
We could ask him to repeat, Brian, that the news is good. And
the news is
at or above estimated ending balance. Terrific.
Give you a round of applause, but that might be overkill. But Councilor Lewis.
This started in January and ended in March. So obviously, three of the four of us, this is our first time with this exercise. And I guess when I am trying to kind of figure out where to put my attention, I'm going to the narrative, which you kind of helped just clarify and not the numbers. But we do have some big kind of unexpected numbers, including the Willamette Falls funds that came from the state. How do we track those over time? So those kind of blips on the radar that are kind of other funds that aren't ours but are in our keeping?
We have
Fair enough.
Sorry, can you repeat that last?
That's clear enough as a question.
So we have a variety of methods for tracking money for which we have a fiduciary responsibility but not ownership. In Willamette Falls, we have segregated those funds in a sub-fund, where we only track Willamette Falls-related expenses, and our finance team in Parks and Nature does a good job of tracking revenues and expenditures. And that's a consistent practice across the agency, whether it is trying to think of other examples. For instance, when we receive funds from the Oregon Zoo Foundation for improvements, we have ways to track those specifically to make sure they're used for the intended purpose.
In terms of kind of the global patterns, are we going to look like we've spiked an end fund or an interim fund because we're sitting on something for a while that we know how to expend at once in several years?
So particularly when it comes to capital funds, we do keep those separate because they don't follow normal trends. We might be sitting on large cash reserves for a long time until the project happens, and then expenditure patterns are going to look a lot different than, say, regular zoo operations for instance, another good example is park operations, where they spend a lot of money in the summer and the spring, but not a whole lot in the winter. So we keep our operational funds for Parks and Nature, in the general fund, solid waste, they have a separate operating fund. The zoo has an operating fund because those follow, you know, their own seasonal cyclical patterns. And then we have separate capital funds where we have different expectations for when revenue comes in, when dollars go out.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. All right, we're moving on to the consent agenda. Today's consent agenda consists of two items, resolution number 19-4993 and the minutes for the May 16th, 2019 council meeting. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Thank you. Councillor Gonzalez has made the motion, and Councillor Stacey has seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. All those against, nay? No? Okay, good. It passes. Much appreciated. Mr. Scott?
Yes,
any updates?
Thank you. I have two quick updates. Hopefully, Council saw Roy Brower's email that the application period for the next round of innovation and investment in innovation grants will open next week. This is a good item to share with your districts and networks if you're looking for content material. In 2019, we anticipate awarding up to $3 million in I&I grants. The capital grant portion of this will have a strong preference for projects focused on recycling infrastructure improvements and the processing of food waste. The deadline for applications will be Friday, July 12th, excuse me, at 4 p.m. We will be hosting workshops on June 10th and 13th to provide more information to applicants. We'll also have information up on our website as well. And then the second item, I sent an email earlier today. I just wanted to make sure you saw that Heidi Ron has agreed to be the interim deputy chief operating officer. And so she'll be backfilling my position while I backfill the interim COO position. Those of you who worked with Heidi, she's really fantastic. She helped successfully implement the $125 million Zubon program. Over the last year, she's got the asset management and capital planning program here set up at Metro. So I'm excited she's willing to step into this role for a few months. And
that's awesome.
It'll help us all out. So,
congrats.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks. Anything else? Counselors, any communications?
Thank you, Madam President. It's been a busy period for the Transit-Oriented Development Steering Committee. The committee at its May 29th, yesterday, meeting heard a presentation from CPAW, Community Partners for Affordable Housing, about their Cedar Grove project, a 44-unit affordable housing development in Beaverton. The county, Washington County, is a project partner and owns the property. It will include very low-income units available to those earning under 30% of AMI. Median income. The committee also recommended approval of $400,000 in transit-oriented development funding for Proud Grounds 5020 condos in North Portland. The six-story project will include 64 for-sale condominiums available to households earning from 60 to 100% of AMI, as well as some market-rate units. This is the region, I think, as well as the TOD program's first essay into ownership affordability using a condo model rather than individual lots, which ground ordinarily would do. And the TOD Steering Committee reviewed preliminary designs for the Gresham Civic Southwest parcel. Palindrome is the developer. It's anticipated to include a mix of affordable and market rate units. That's at the Gresham Civic Station on Max Light Rail. And today at noon, on behalf of the Metro and the TOD program, I participate in the groundbreaking for Bridge Housing's North Williams Apartments, 60 deeply affordable family-sized apartments, which also received funding, $390,000 in TOD money. So there's a lot going on in affordable housing, as I referenced in my remarks, but the TOD program is plunking away there as well.
Yes, amazing. It's great. Well, Councilor Gonzalez, go ahead.
I do have one quick update for
the
council.
About my long one.
No. You reminded me with you always do such great communications, very detailed. And I just made a note to myself. Keep my agenda. Yesterday, I was able to attend the City of Hillsborough's 53rd Avenue Community Center opening. which is a new park facility that they're opening up, of course, on 53rd Avenue. It's 50,000 square feet of community center space facility, exercise space, community meeting space. I mean, you name it. There's everything in it. It's the first cross-laminated timber community center in the entire country. It is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful facility going up in Hillsborough. So kudos to them. And we're really excited to work with them on the Parks Bond, and their Parks Department is as well. So I wanted to share some of that.
All right, councilors, I'm sorry, Councilor Craddock, did you have anything to add?
No, I don't.
Okay. I just wanted to take note that the Regional Arts and Culture Council, we needed to appoint a liaison, and I've asked Councilor Lewis to do that. If there is no issue with that. So I'm just looking around the room and up into the sky, Councillor Craddock.
Yeah, I think Councillor Lewis will be an excellent representative.
All right, then we'll move forward with that and let them know. All right, with that, seeing no further business before the council, we are adjourned.